And thank you for joining us on the weekend. Joining us this weekend is Nick Stark. Nick is a local pharmacist, and he's here to talk about some of the things that concern all of us, because all of us have gone to the doctor. All of us take some kind of medication. And of course, we all have elderly parents who have a lot of medications, and some of us get frustrated as to what to take, what not to take, and then we're bombarded by advertisements and television, magazines. You're sitting in the doctor's office and you run across an ad that says, ask your doctor about this. So you ask your doctor about that. But we're going to find out straight from Nick, a pharmacist. Again, local pharmacist is going to talk with us here today about that. Nick, thank you very much for joining us on the weekend.
Louis, thanks for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about pharmacy and school and how you got interested in all this. When you were a kid, did you have like a chemistry set? Were you always interested in that?
So when I grew up in upstate New York, I was going to go to med school. I was going to be a surgeon or be an allergist. I had really bad allergies as a kid. And when I was in elementary school, I missed a lot of school. Second, third, and fourth grade was in the allergist office every day. And I think that was where I really got intrigued with medicine. So it wasn't until about 11th grade, my family friend said, hey, you know, pharmacy is a really cool career path too. You know, you should go check it out. And I said, well, I don't really want to just give out pills. They're like, no, there's a lot more going on than that. So we're actually going to talk about that today. So lo and behold, I ended up going to Albany College of Pharmacy up in Albany, New York, and graduated in 2014. So,
well, for somebody who wants to follow that career path, what do they need to do? Obviously, they have to, you know, do well in science and in high school, but then tell us as far as the preparation.
You definitely need to have a really good background in definitely your sciences. It's a lot more on pathophysiology, chemistry, science, biology. Pharmacy school, actually, we didn't get into the therapeutics until the very end. The most of it was building up to and understanding all the body systems, because in order to understand how medications work, you need to understand the framework for how your body's going to, you know, kind of sort out the medication. So the majority of our education was actually on the pathophys and immunology and biochemistry and, you know, how your body converts one thing to another.
And most medical students, when they go to medical school, you know, they have the cadavers where they practice and learn the anatomy. You all, did you have to learn specifically like how each medication works on a particular disease, a particular illness, or how some parts of the body may or may not metabolize that medication?
So we didn't have cadavers, but we did have a lot of – the way it was structured was basically we had – once we got into the actual pharmacy program, it was you learned your pathophys, did your immunology, your biochem, and after that you went into therapeutics, and that was basically, okay, disease state, what's going on, what are the problems in the body, what are the medications available, how do they target the problems, and then circling back, and how does everything tie together to the health of the patient and getting into counseling and all of that. So.
And when someone goes to a pharmacy, they look at the over-the-counter stuff. Sometimes they're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to take. So my question is to you is, do you all have to know just about every name of every medication, or are there sometimes – because, you know, they're developing new medications all the time.
Right. So a lot of times in the over-the-counter aisle, it can be kind of like a maze. So we always try to go out and help people. You know, we're working. But a lot of the brands that you'll see are really knockoffs of the same ingredients. So say like NyQuil and Mucinex, for example, might both actually have basically the same thing as NyQuil in a tablet. One is a liquid. So they're mostly all the same ingredients, or they've mixed together or patched up a few ones with different ones. But for the most part, a lot of the meds are actually the same. It just looks like there's a lot, but it's really all a combination of the same meds. So
one of the things that we were talking about before the program started is how many changes have been implemented by the government. And some of the most recent that we've heard a lot is Centers for Disease Control talked about opioids and other pain medications and some of the things that they wanted to do as far as making sure that, you know, some patients do not go doctor shopping or, you know, different pharmacies. Could you tell us a little bit about that regulation?
Yeah. So a few years ago, right when I was finishing pharmacy school, and I think it was 2013, because I was still working back home at Hanford up in upstate New York, New York State had passed the what's called the Prescription Monitoring Program, and aka the PMP. And so a lot of states have adopted that. And basically what that is, it's a database. So every time you get a prescription filled that's a controlled substance, it gets uploaded from the pharmacy into this big database that the state has access to. So if you go from one pharmacy, say at Walgreens, and you get another medication filled for another narcotic at, say, Walmart or an independent, there is a record there So that way, basically, it's supposed to eliminate doctor shopping and, you know, pharmacy shopping, which is a really big problem in our country. But here in El Paso, and the same as where I'm from, upstate New York, we were close to Canada, Vermont, New Hampshire, only a few minute drive, a few hours, I guess I should say. But here in El Paso, you can go to New Mexico and kind of cross around. But it's designed to limit folks from doing the classic doctor shopping thing. But a lot of folks now, a lot of doctors aren't prescribing, at least at the primary care model, in the primary care office. They're making you go to the now to the specialist for the pain management to get, say, something like morphine for somebody who has like a chronic a back problem from, say, a car accident or something. So a lot of times they're not doing it now at primary care. That's almost gone away. They'll maybe give you sometimes like a 3 to 5 day supply, but a lot of times they're now pushing you to pain specialists. So that way there's one or two doctors in town doing all of the pain dispensing.
And there is a limit also. I found out that, doctors will give you a month's supply, but then you have to go back to see the doctor or pass a urine sample every 2 months or so.
Right. So that's also to make sure that you're not selling the medications that actually the drugs in your system. So say you're taking like morphine, for example, every day you had a car accident that happened 10 years ago and you've got a crushed spine. So you're obviously going to need some pain control. So a lot of them, that's a way to kind of do the, develop trust with the practitioner and the patient. And a lot of them will actually make you sign a contract saying, if you agree to receive, say, oxycodone or morphine from us at this clinic, you cannot go to another clinic. If we find out, you're out the door. So a lot of that's meant to develop a relationship with the patient. And so if they're aware, you're on the hook just as much as we are.
You mentioned a little while ago about where you live, being close to Canada. And here we're close to New Mexico and to Mexico. And in New Mexico, pharmaceutical or medicinal cannabis is allowed, as is in Colorado. But then in Mexico, you can go ahead and people used to go there and buy medications because they were a lot cheaper. I'm not sure if that's the same anymore. But what are some complications that patients or you as a pharmacist might run into something like that?
So a lot of people, especially here where I work here in El Paso, a lot of folks have a doctor actually in Juarez, right? See that Juarez next door. And then they also have a primary care back here. They're a surgeon they've seen. And, a lot of people are looking for alternatives. Say they're still in pain. They're still in discomfort. Something's not right. They're trying to get a second opinion. This is kind of where the whole polypharmacy and, doctor shopping comes in. But in not using one provider, one practice, you're putting yourself at risk for a lot of safety issues, including drug interactions and adverse effects. But for those people that are using multiple doctors, it's really important that you going back to what I was going to talk about in a few minutes, know your medicine, know your pharmacist, because if you're using one pharmacist or one pharmacy, if you develop a relationship with a pharmacist that I know if you're going to the doctor in Juarez, I'm going to remember to check your profile before I give out that medicine to you. And I'm going to remember to do a double check and make sure, okay, are you still taking that other medicine you got from Juarez? Because a lot of the medications in Mexico are branded differently. It might be the same ingredient, but the actual name on the package is going to be totally different than what's marketed in the U.S. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to try this new thing, but it's really could be a duplication of what you're already taking here.
And sometimes the patient may not tell you about something that they seem to think it's harmless, like perhaps some kind of herb or some kind of natural medication?
Right. So let's just do a classic example. So a lot of seizure medications, things like phenobarbital and phenytoin are what's called inducers. So it actually speeds up how quickly your body metabolizes other medications. So when you're taking those medications, other meds might not be as effective, for example, in somebody doing that. So it's really important that you always tell us that, because something like that's really common over the counter is called St. John's wort, and that is also another inducer. And everybody just says, well, it's in the over-the-counter aisle. I can just take it. No big deal. They sell it at the store. It can have a lot of complications. And if you're somebody on chronic meds and you have chronic health conditions and you're juggling, three or four different disease states, that can really, it can throw off everything. And then everybody says, well, I'm just taking this herbal. They're trying to do better. But really, the honest answer is, check with a pharmacist, check with your doctor first before you do something like that, because just because it's available over the counter in the aisle, you can walk in and grab it, doesn't mean necessarily you should be taking it.
We're visiting with Nick Stark on the weekend, and he is a local pharmacist. We're discussing some of the changes in pharmaceutical laws and also some of the issues that are faced by some of the patients, especially when they are taking more than one medication, and they sometimes go to Mexico or New Mexico or take herbs. One of the things you were talking about before also, Nick, is that you just came back from a conference, and people may not be familiar with some of these organizations that help out pharmacists and help out the public and how to deal with them. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with us a little bit about that organization and what you found out.
Yeah, thank you. So I just got back from San Francisco actually yesterday, so still a little jet lagged. But so the conference I was at was called the Academy of Managed Care Pharmacy, or AMCP. It's a big annual conference they have every year. And so essentially what's going on with that, a lot of the players in the conference that are involved in the organization is a lot of folks in the pharmaceutical companies, a lot in the actual health plans and the pharmacy benefits, as well as pharmacists working with retail and consulting as well. So the big focus right now is there's all these new medications that cost thousands of dollars, new oncology meds that just came out, new breakthrough medications, new injectables for rheumatoid arthritis, just to name a few. You know, these cost thousands of dollars, not just a couple thousand. Some cost $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 for a therapy. So they're trying to find value in using these medications and kind of spinning off of that. So now, how do you manage the folks that are maybe already, you know, they have high cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, you know, rheumatoid arthritis? They're probably on at least 10 or 12 meds. So for those folks that are, you know, need chronic care and they're on chronic meds, how do you prevent them from going to the hospital? How do you prevent them from overutilizing services? How do you decrease healthcare costs so we can keep a budget with the health plans so they can afford to budget in these new breakthrough meds? So basically, there's a new model that came out a few years ago, and it's really getting traction now. It's called a patient-centered medical home. And in a nutshell, so what they're doing is there's an agreement between the health plan, sometimes with the pharmacy, and also with the physicians. And what they're doing is now when you go to the doctors for somebody specifically who has a lot of chronic meds and a chronic health conditions, they're telling the doctor, hey, listen, you need to help manage this patient better. We're going to only reimburse you now or give you an incentive if the patient is actually doing well. So somebody, say, who's high blood pressure and cholesterol, let's make it simple. If you go for your checkup after the first month and you've already been taking your meds and maybe you've forgotten a few doses and your blood pressure and your cholesterol aren't doing any better, the insurance plan is probably not going to reimburse your doctor for that visit until your numbers get better or until you've shown you know, changes in your health. So it's really becoming a bringing all the resources together and encouraging the doctors to utilize other resources to increase health outcomes with folks.
And what about in some instances, it's not necessarily the doctor's fault, but it's the patient who and there are plenty of examples of people here. You know, my sister who passed away, diabetes. One of the things they do is, you know, they'll eat whatever they want, and then, you know, well, I'll inject my insulin now so that it'll be okay. Or they'll do everything wrong, and then right before they go to the doctor, they try and stay straight, but that A1C level really tells what's going on.
And really, who's liable? Is the doctor? That's the patient's fault.
Patient's fault, I would think.
Right. So really what they're trying to get at is, you know, where's the gaps in care? So say somebody who's diabetic, you're probably going to see an endocrinologist, right, to manage the diabetes. Your family care doctor might still be there as the primary, you know, the caregiver, and then also to refer you out. But, you know, I actually ended up starting my own business a few weeks ago, and I'm trying to identify folks that are maybe taking a lot of medications and have a lot of health conditions. So, and specifically folks that are seeing multiple doctors, and that's really key to pharmacy in general. But you need to make sure that you have somebody, either a caregiver or a resource to go to outside of the doctor's office. So when you get home, you're doing your day-to-day, you know, your insulin, your metformin, you're taking your meds. You know, who's going to make sure that you're taking care of everything? Who's making sure that you're doing everything right once you're home? And that kind of goes along with this patient-centered medical home idea where they're trying to increase resources or maybe see the patient more frequently, but maybe you just need to see a pharmacist instead of the doctor at the next visit. And a way to kind of do that is helping people use technology that's already out there so they can help remember to take their meds every day. And, you know, I'm looking at your hand on the table and you have a, you know, a tablet and I have here my iPad, but how many people out there now have an iPhone or one of those Android, the Samsung smartphones? I mean, you walk around the street, everybody has one, right? How many people are actually utilizing that technology to maybe help it make their health managing easier, you know?
It's just a quick game app.
Right.
This is what's happening.
Right.
Game of Thrones.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what you just mentioned earlier about the technology and the apps, because one of the things that has come up I guess within the last year or so, perhaps maybe longer, are medical portals where people will get the information from their doctor and they can go home and check their appointments, their history, something like that. Is that working that you can see?
So the portals at home, I actually have experienced this. I just went to the foot doctor for the first time, had trouble getting treatment for some bone spurs and all that. So their office just got set up with this, but that's great. I think the issue is a lot of people don't know how to use the technology. Somebody didn't walk them through. So for example, I'm trying to think of an example. Like my grandparents, I tried to show them how to use their iPhone and stuff a few weeks ago, and I mean, they're kind of lost. You know, they don't really know what they're doing. So a lot of folks don't know how to use the computers that well. But for somebody like you and I that are probably a little more tech savvy, that's great because then you have a resource at home. I can log in. I can see what they prescribed. I can see what they're expecting at the next office visit. That's great. It's kind of just like, you know, the seatbelt in the car. It's only good if you wear it, you know.
And what about when you go to, let's say, for example, the controlled substance or something else, and sometimes you go to – people like to go to pharmacies where they know their pharmacist. It's a good thing to know. And in fact, people are encouraging that. And it doesn't happen as much as I guess it did back when you know, small towns, whatever, everybody knew their pharmacist. But sometimes they go and they're disappointed because – that pain medication might not be ready, and one of the reasons they might be is because they're out of it, they had to order it, or they're not sure because they went to a different pharmacy time before. So these are issues that are really hard for people who do suffer from chronic pain and who are not abusing these medications, and for older people who, you know, God forbid, but sometimes, you know, a grandchild might go and get their medications, and instead of giving the gramps the whole bottle, they keep a couple for themselves.
Yeah, and just going off of that, there was just an article in New Mexico with, I think, UNM up in Albuquerque with their pharmacy school. American Pharmacists Association has a student organization at almost every pharmacy school now in the country, and they have a program called Generation RX. And the goal of that, including what we did back in Albany, was they're going out in the community and they're trying to educate folks on, you know, locking up your medications, keeping your controlled substances away, because there was a report that came out recently, I think it was in 2013, I can double check on this, but the number of deaths from prescription overdoses exceeded the deaths from motor vehicle accidents in the U.S. And I mean, that to me is like, wow, that is insane. And a lot of people, if you go look on the reports from the government, where did people get their medications from? The pharmacy, or they went in grandma's medication cabinet? They probably went in the parents' or, you know, the family members'
and
medication.
And a lot of people who do have these overdoses are not people who have been prescribed the medications. They get it from somewhere else.
Right. So say, let's use the grandma and grandpa example with a bad back. They're taking OxyContin every day, you know, extended release, a really potent drug that really not many people should be taking. So after a while, your body develops tolerance, right? So you get used to the medication, quote unquote. So somebody who's never taken that medication before, so say they're opioid naive, they go and take that. The major side effect for those medications, especially for pain meds, is you stop breathing. You know, and not stop breathing for a second, you're going to be 6 feet under. So that's the whole point of that Generation RX thing with the pharma schools and the communities, especially in New Mexico. There is a really big, I don't want to say the word drug problem, but there is a lot of, I guess diversion maybe is a good way to put it, or just a lot of folks. And, you know, a lot of people don't know. It's kind of like when we came out a few years ago and it was in the news about people, you know, using like Delsym or some of the cough meds and they were robo-tripping, you know, to get a high. But Delsym is actually a relative of codeine. So, I mean, if you take enough of that medication, you can suppress your breathing and a lot of other things that are toxic. So I think this really goes back to focusing on, you know, giving people tools and education in everyday people, everyday life that they can use to stay safe and stay healthy.
And sometimes people may wonder, well, how do these young people figure out, you know, that this will work or this may not work, like the cough medicine, the Sudafed, the ephedrine. And I heard, must have been a couple months ago, from another pharmacist who said that, and I'm not sure if they still have them or not, where kids would go to parties and they have these bowls filled with medications.
Yeah, no, that definitely still happens. That's a huge problem. And a lot of kids don't understand the repercussions. It's kind of like saying when you first got your car, you know, I used to go speeding up the mountain, you know, and not wear a seatbelt. And, you know, it wasn't until you saw like at prom when they had the car that was crushed, that got in a huge accident that rolled over the mountain. You were like, holy cow, you know, maybe we should take this more seriously. But the opioid overdosing and people dying, that's really an epidemic right now. And there's a lot of focus right now. Obama just came out with some new information. I didn't read the article yet, but just came out over the weekend during the conference, you know, a report on how he's going to attack opioid overuse and abuse. And, you know, we're trying to actually save lives and, you know, preventing people from getting into this situation. Because, I mean, as you know, probably with, you know, all of us in this room probably know somebody who suffered from addiction. It's a big problem. It's not just something where you can, okay, I'm going to stop doing it tomorrow. You know, it can really throw people off the rest of their lives. So,
and I guess it's maybe once or twice a year, the DEA has a place, a designated place where you can go.
Medication take back day.
Yes. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Those are really good resources. So maybe just to take a quick second and spin off of this. A lot of people call and want to know what to do with their medications that they're not taking, or if it was their grandparents, someone passed away. If it's not a controlled substance, if it's not a pain medication, something like that, the best way to do to get rid of it is either wrap it up in cat litter and then put it in the garbage, or to dissolve it in like wet, hot coffee grounds and then put it into a bag or something in the trash. So that's just some good tips for everyday people. But so going back, the take back day, usually what they'll do is they'll have a police officer there to log any medications. And actually everything that gets taken in goes to an incinerator. But that's really the safest way. Again, if you need to do something before the take back days, if it's in the summer and the or, you know, in the holidays, doing what I just told you is probably the safest way. But the take back days, I think when we did it for the first time in Albany at our health expo on campus, we had something like it was thousands of pounds of medication that got taken back. And I mean, you know, this is what people have access to. You know, I mean, this is really preventing people from, you know, taking expired meds. You know, you're not taking two of the same thing, maybe something from 10 years ago, or, you know, something that you took maybe just when you went to the hospital or had surgery. So, you know, taking advantage of the take back days is really good. I encourage people to definitely, you know, go to the event, bring in your meds with you on those days. If you're looking for something, a way to do it at home, if it's not a narcotic, do it either with a cat litter or the coffee grounds. So.
Just don't drink the coffee.
Just don't drink the coffee.
And don't put the cat in there.
Yeah, don't drink the filtered.
What about as far as, you know, we talked a little bit about herbs and natural medicines. It's not just, you know, the tea that grandma brews for you or your auntie, but it's there are full-fledged, you know, homeopathic doctors. Yeah, and I know the doctor from Arizona is very popular, Andrew Weil. And they have a lot of information, but again, some people don't realize that, you know, some of these medications are derived from plants.
Right.
And the fact that also because they, you take this, you have to be careful what other things you're taking, or it might – we have a tendency also, especially here along the border, and maybe the same thing in New York, the fact that, hey, this worked for my aunt, so
– probably works for me.
Try you. Yeah.
You know, I will just a word of caution for folks anybody listening. You know, herbals, some of them are great. A lot of them have a lot of drug interactions. There's very few that have a really low safety profile, that have a very good safety profile, excuse me. You know, going back to what we first talked about, when we get on, you know your medicine, know your pharmacist, have someone central resource that is going through everything you're taking to flag everything you're taking, because a lot of medications that are herbals, a lot of those have a lot of side effects and a lot of drug interactions. So maybe for somebody who's not taking any medications, any prescriptions, it's plus or minus probably okay, you know, as long as you don't have anything else going on. But somebody who's on a lot of prescriptions or even just one or two, you know, a lot of these can make your heart rate go up. A lot of them can have a stimulant effect. A lot of them can have a depressant effect. So if you don't know what you're doing and you're going to drive right after you took that first dose, you know, if you crash into the guardrail, you know what I mean? And how good is that?
We're visiting with Nick Stark. Nick is a local pharmacist, and we're talking about some of the changes in the pharmaceutical industry, as well as some of the changes in health laws and what the doctors are doing to prescribe certain medications. What we're talking about today is probably already changing tomorrow. We talked about controlled substances, and one of those that has been discussed for the last several years is cannabis. And I just read a very good article in the Scientific American, and it was talking about the fact that at one point the government was ready to say, hey, you know, cannabis is probably in the same area as alcohol, so why don't we just change that? But just when they were about to do that, it was during the Nixon administration, and all of a sudden the DA went into the Treasury Department or Department of Justice, and John Mitchell said that it was a I think it was a code one or
schedule one.
Schedule one, yes. Right. Which was up there with heroin. And
right.
So you as a pharmacist, you may not be able to answer this. Do you see that perhaps eventually this is going to be used as medicine everywhere?
To be honest, my honest answer, I'm not too sure. So going back to your schedule one point, so anything that's a controlled substance in the U.S., we can legally dispense a schedule five, which is considered, you know, mildly addictive, you know, not too heavy, to a schedule two, something like morphine or OxyContin. That's a schedule two. We're not legally allowed to dispense a schedule one, which would be like cocaine, cannabis as well. Those are probably always going to be through dispensaries unless we really change the whole structure of how we, you know, the system works in the U.S. So it is possible. And, you know, I was listening to Ellen a few weeks ago. I was watching her show, and, you know, there was this family out in, I think, California, and they were talking about their little two-year-old daughter, and she had terrible seizures. She literally had a probably seizure every 15 minutes, and the only thing that worked was, you know, cannabis. And then And then I read another report the same day up in Colorado, and it was they were talking about the increase in traffic accidents due to people either not paying attention or under the influence, and they were relating it to marijuana. So, you know, how do you find a nice balance between, you know, what's helpful and maybe what's toxic or what's going to cause too many side effects? So I'm not sure if it's going to go all the way. You know, I think with the governments and especially the patient advocacy groups out there, say for like multiple sclerosis or for seizures, you know, they're going to the governments and the lobbyists saying, hey, you know, we need this because this is working. But, you know, I just got back from San Francisco. I mean, you can walk down Market Street and I mean, there's marijuana you can smell everywhere. So, I mean, how do you find a nice balance between, you know, what's effective, what's good for medicinal purposes and what's good for recreation?
We have about 3 minutes left, Nick. So if there's something that you forgot to mention in your bullet points, if you wouldn't mind sharing those with us.
Yeah, sure. So let's call this the lightning round, the top five things everybody should know, things to be aware of. So especially anybody, if you're taking one medication or you're taking 10, anytime you go to the pharmacy, a doctor, a specialist, anybody, homeopathic doctor, whatever, my suggestion is to always have an updated medication list with you at all times for you and your family members. And if you can do this electronic, that's the best way. So if you've got a smartphone right there in front of you while you're listening to this, or if you've got a tablet and a computer at home, if you keep it electronic, you always have it with you. No more going to the pharmacy or the doctor and saying, I don't remember what I was taking. So point number one, always keep an updated medication list with you. Second, when you're at the pharmacy or if you're getting prescriptions through mail order, however you're getting it, always ask the name of what you're taking, what they're for, and any special instructions. A lot of medications you have to take with food. A lot have stimulant effects. A lot can make you drowsy. Always ask. Even if we're busy, the pharmacist, we always want to help you. So don't ever come in blindly to say, oh, I'm just picking up. I don't know what they're for. Always ask. Always, always. And this goes on to point number three, know your medicine, know your pharmacist. For those of you that goes to multiple doctors, you go to multiple pharmacies, make sure your one pharmacist that you use, your primary one at least, knows everything you're taking. Don't keep anything aside. If you're taking any herbals or vitamins or supplements, tell us. That's really important to your health. Number four, use technology to make it easy. There's a lot of apps out there. One is called MediSafe that you can use and help you manage your meds, set reminders. It's really easy to use, and I think it's really robust. Number five, probably the most important, is avoid polypharmacy. Do not go to one pharmacy chain, fill one prescription, go to another one because it's a lower price. They're not going to be cross-checked and you're setting yourself up for really a health disaster. So use one pharmacy chain, one pharmacy business. If it's an independent and there's no other ones, stick to that one pharmacy.
And as we're wrapping up here, you mentioned about your local business. And if you wouldn't mind sharing with us the website that they can go to find out a little bit more if they have questions for you.
Yeah, sure. So it's actually going to be www.starkhealthconsulting.com. Probably the best way to reach me by is email, and that's Dr. Nick, then DRNICK at starkhealthconsulting.com.
Well, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Oh, thanks, Louie. Thanks for having me.
We've been visiting with Nick Stark. Nick is a local pharmacist here in town, and as you were listening, he discussed some of the changes in some of the pharmaceutical laws, some of the health laws, and some of the medical portals and other electronic and technology things that are available to you as a patient. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Louie.